myself that took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So Brendan Murphy, Marty Kavanagh, Liam Silk, Robbie Piggott and Colin Murphy. What do they have in common, Conan and Connor, who are here in studio with me today? Let me have it.
Well, we know it's going to ruin it for everyone.
Well, what all these fellas have in common is that in the last week we've learned that they're going to play football in America. Nothing unusual really about that, players going out to America to play football. I did it loads of times myself. I loved it. You get your flight paid out. You might get a few quid if you're as good as what I was. You can bring some money home, get yourself through college. It's a huge bonus, huge kind of perk that when you look at players from Leash, from Carlow, from these counties, there are not many perks in it for them, despite what people might like to believe. They don't get to these media days and get these, you know, payments. Yeah. And, you know, they don't get a lot of the kind of things that some of the top counties do. So for those weaker counties, one of the kind of bonuses of being from a weaker county is you're out of the championship maybe in June, May or June, and you've the option to go travel to America and spend 2 months there. And because of the club structure in most counties is so dysfunctional, only one of my 5 summers in America did I come back and Port Leash weren't still knocking around quarterfinals or semi-finals. Yeah. So I missed nothing and I gained an awful lot. But now the rule is that if you are part of the championship panel in your county and your county gets knocked out, unless you've got a J1 visa and you can prove you're a student on a J1, you can't go to America even when you're knocked out. So this is why this is so unusual to have a lot of inter-county players leaving before the championship has even started. That is the reason, is because if they kick a ball, if they go training on the championship panel, then they're precluded from going to America. It's just so lousy. I don't see the point of this, or who benefits from this. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, and obviously the county are losing out then as well, because they're losing their best players, who either they go to America now or they don't go. Like, that's, yeah. Like, you can get put out in June and still can't go because you're in the county squad. What's interesting though is the wording of the rule, because yet again it's not that extensive. So I think I was saying to you, Willie, that a county could still feasibly name somebody in the panel. Would that affect them then going to America? Like, imagine Carlow just turned around and named Brendan Murphy for the live game.
You see, like, to be fair, the way Carlow have come out in support of Brendan Murphy, I'm actually surprised they've been so nice about it. Like, I mean, like, because I left a good few times, but I didn't really leave. I never left when I was on the team mid-season. And people were annoyed with me for leaving before the year started, or even leaving if I fell out with a manager and wasn't on the team. I was never an important Leash player when I went to, you know what I mean, if I went to America. There was a reason for your best player to go to America. Like, I mean, I imagine that a lot of that squad must be really pissed off with him. But, like, I mean, Turlough O'Brien has been very nice about it. I see one of their selectors has been talking about it as well, and he's wishing him all the best and saying that they understand. And maybe he's going to Boston, and there is some money in Boston, and Brendan obviously got an offer that he can't say no to. But, like, I thought he was Mr. Carlow. Like, I didn't see this coming at all. And the Carlow Rising, the whole movement in Carlow.
Do you think they're being as nice about it behind closed doors, maybe, and they're trying to put a face
maybe
on
not,
it?
Maybe not, I know that. Tom Wogan is his name, the selector who's been talking about. He said he's a young man and he's entitled to go. Management don't have a problem with that. I'd say they do now. Like, let's be honest, it was a decision he had to make for himself and he made it. We wish him well. There are no issues. It's one of those things that's happening in a lot of counties and you can't blame him in any way. So, like, I mean, players have a life to live, and if you get an offer like that, it might pay your bills. You might be building a house. You might need a new car. Your life is more important than inter-county football, which is only supposed to be a hobby. So I understand all that, but I don't see how the rule precluding him from playing in America when Carlow are out. Carlow could lose to Loud, lose first round of qualifiers. Then Brendan can play both. Now, the argument there will be, oh, his club will lose out if he goes to America. So I think this is what this rule has been brought in for, is to try and help clubs out in the summer months and have their players. But sure, there's no championship played during the summer with club. Do you know what I mean? This is how illogical all this is. So I don't see anyone benefiting from this. Brendan Murphy isn't benefiting because he's missing out and playing with Carlow. Carlow Inter County isn't benefiting because they're losing their best player for the championship. And Rathfilly, his club, aren't benefiting because he's going to go anyways. Because if you get this big offer, you're just going to go anyway. So like, yeah. How has this helped then from the way it used to work from back when I was playing?
And it is, it's a bit weird, like, say from Carlo's point of view, where you're like, Jesus lads, you're on the cusp of something here. So they've got Live in the first round, thinking, right, they get through that the way Live were going, the way Carlo were going. Kildare, I know that's a big step up from Carlo, but
their confidence is low.
Yeah, look at the trajectory.
There's a scalp there,
There's a scalp there, is right. And then they get through that, it's Wexford, Leash or Westmeath in the semi-final. Yeah. Surely, like, you would think Brendan Murphy and all of Carlo are looking at this going, Jesus, things go right.
Yeah. If you were really coldly realistic about it at the same time, Brendan Murphy might look at it and say, oh, we might lose to Louth. Yeah. And then we get one game in the qualifiers.
That's the other way of
looking
at it.
And while I make the decision now, I could be there, you know, in the middle of the end of June. I missed out in America for the summer because I decided to stay around for this. Whereas Carlo have probably achieved have already their biggest achievement this season. Getting promoted to Division 3.
Turlock O'Brien said that, didn't he? He said we've achieved our goal.
Yeah, they achieved their goals, and maybe they celebrated that league too much. But I reckon, like, Carlow, like every other county, I know the idea is out there that the league is more important to a lot of teams. I don't think it's more important. I think it's more enjoyable, and it's more, you know, they can actually achieve something. But it's still all about the championship. But it's hard to know about Brendan regretting it or not, because there's only one year I went out of the five where I'd look back and go, maybe I shouldn't have gone, because it was 2005 and Leash made the Leinster final against Dublin and were beaten by a point, a late 45. Yeah. And I was supposed to be captain that year. Now, I didn't leave mid-year. I had my mind made up that I was leaving before the year. I never went in with Leash anywhere near them that whole year. I was gone for a full year. But I still kind of think about the fact that if I was playing against Dublin that day, like 2 years later, I got three from play. Would we have been Leinster champions? Yeah. And me as captain, like, and that kind of is in my head. But then I kind of think about it as well. And Leash needed a last minute goal against Offaly in the first round. And who's to say if I was playing that day, Ross Munley might have passed me the ball and I might have missed that. And you know what I mean? You would have been out in the first round. So these margins, like, there's no good time to ever go. That's when, the way you could potentially miss a brilliant year or you could be kicking yourself that, why did I not just, there's no way of reading the future is basically the analysis here, right?
Well, when did the approaches come in, Willie? When were you getting a shout to say, oh, are you interested in playing? And, you know, or was it the thing that you'd gone the first year and then you knew it was coming? Then
no, because I went four different places, but the word gets out once you go over one. Yeah, he's on the circuit. Like, his head could be turned, kind of thing. Yeah. Now, my head was never turned when I was playing with Leash. I was happy enough to go afterwards. And, like, I mean, the first three times I went, it was before the qualifiers. Or the first two times I went was before the qualifiers. So, like, it was easy. The decision was so easy. Then the third time was the first year of the qualifiers. So I was thinking, like, I really want to go. I need the money. But I was thinking, and we were out of the Leinster Championship and we're in the qualifiers, and I know the only thing we can potentially win now is the All-Ireland. I'm wasting my time here. So, like, I mean, then we beat Clare in the first round of the qualifiers, and I'm looking at the deadline thinking, right, okay. I'm weighing up wanting to win these qualifiers, and we beat Clare. Then we had Derry up in Breffni Park. And if we had beaten Derry... Right, this is, I don't know why I'm even admitting it. Well, I wouldn't admit it because it's not true. But we played Derry on the Saturday night. If Leash beat Derry, I missed the deadline. If Leash lost to Derry, I would go on the Monday. Leash lost to Derry, I was taken off. Now, I wanted to win that game. Like, there's no question that you go out and try. It's just, but was my head, psychologically, was my head where it should have been? You know, like, I genuinely think that there is no way, like, in your own personal pride, you want to play well. And it was embarrassing to be taken off. But, like, we didn't play well on the night. But at the same time, it was I remember thinking, geez, my mind shouldn't be on two different things here. Just...
What's in it for the clubs? Why are they paying so much money for these players to come out? What are they getting out of it?
Well, I suppose it raises the standards. Like, a lot of the county lads might take training. They would be kind of, you know, they would set the standards. And, you know, and plus, people pay in to Gaelic parks as well. And they pay in to see the county lads. And there's a huge interest around it in the summer months when they get a few names out. It's great. Without the names, I don't think people would have the same interest out there at all, you know. No. But just in the homegrown lads. But, like, it's a funny one. Marty Kavanagh, Carlo Hurler, he said, I hate leaving. There's a really good thing going on here in Carlo. This has been in my head for the last 2 months, and I don't want to regret not going in the coming years. This is my last chance to go. And Liam Silk, we'll talk about him in a little while, he said the same thing, that it's his last summer that he can potentially go. And, like, even Galway going so well, he's going. Now, Liam Silk is different than the rest, because Liam Silk, if he stayed with Galway, he probably would have no chance to go, because there's a good chance they'll make the Super 8s. But the Carlo and the Leash lads, they could have played the championship. They could have done both. Yeah. Realistically, both of them probably probably will be out before the deadline.
Liam Silk a bit different as well, because he played for Carfin. I suppose would only be coming back into the Galway setup after so long involved with the club. But you can't can you really blame any of them if it's their last chance to
Listen, it's a really interesting one for me, because I've spent so much time out there and it was so good for me. That's why I'm kind of a little bit annoyed about it, but that's what's there now, and I'm sure it's been brought in to protect the clubs in some way, and at 100% I would accept that reasoning if the club situation wasn't such a mess. And we're going to get into some mess with the clubs here again, because we're not going to have to, lads, because we're still in April. We've another 4 days to go. Like, so everyone listening now will get more into analysis when the championship starts again. So this is the Mayo chairman, Mike Connolly. Connor, you know man. So he's saying, to be honest, and look, it's interesting here having a county board chairman coming out criticising it, because there's one thing having players criticising it, supporters criticising it, you'll have county players, but this is supposed to help county boards, and you have a county board chairman saying, to be honest, we're not happy with the situation. Croke Park needs to acknowledge that it's just not working. We're trying to keep everyone happy, and it's not simple. I'm personally not happy with the situation for our clubs, for ourselves and for our senior team. It's just not working. We now have a situation where we're battling with our senior management team, we're battling with clubs, and we're trying to draw a fixtures plan that can deliver games. And all this is an issue with Mayo is because Galway obviously are playing no club.
Yeah.
They're not releasing their players. So Mayo play them, and immediately Mayo don't want to be a disadvantage against Galway.
Yeah.
So they're in a really awkward situation. So like, there's probably internal rows going on in Mayo all over the place.
Yeah, and he says that though, and like, Mayo have been quite good in terms of observing the April clubs. We've played... the county players have been available for two league and one championship game in the space of 4 weeks, which is really good. Now, the county players were available at the weekend just gone. I was really surprised. I thought he'd pull them, but no, they all played league games at the weekend. And Mayo played, it's since got out on Twitter, so it's not old news anymore, but they played Donegal in the challenge match on Tuesday night, so that would have been only been a couple of days after they played in the league game as well. So Mayo county players have been really busy.
Jesus, yeah.
But like, I was just kind of looking at our fixtures after I saw what Mike Connelly was saying. So we played like five games between league and championship. We played five games on the last weekend of March to the end of April, and over the next 4 months we'll play five league games in league and championship.
Right.
So just we're playing the same amount of games in a month than we will in the next 4 months.
Right.
And we played the first championship game on the first weekend of April, and we're not playing the next championship game until the last weekend in August.
That's right, it's madness. Token gesture. How many times do we have to say this? Like, I mean, it's just happening too often. It's bullshit. There was no thought put into this. Mm. There's very little I've ever disagreed with the CPA on since they started. I've always talked common sense, and it always seems to be very logical what they're saying. But they brought out this April for clubs, so I'm not criticising the GA. It was one of their three proposals for a championship restructure. It was within one of them. And I remember tweeting, can't understand that at all. And I actually publicly criticised the CPA. So this isn't... So the GPA, or the GA, actually took the one thing of... belonging to the CPA that I actually couldn't I didn't want. Like, they actually thought the one thing I thought was a disaster, they thought, what a great idea.
But why would you want to play in April anyway? We keep going on, but like, April's free, grand, play all your league matches, get them out of the way. What is the point in playing a championship
I don't know, and we're not going to get into much of what is the point, because there's another story in Wexford which is even more shocking, and that is three Wexford club football championship games had been rescheduled for this Friday night, but they've now been cancelled. So these were already scheduled for during April. They were called off, and the story goes that they were called off because of the hurling squad were going on a training camp or something like that. So they're rescheduled for this Friday night. Now they've been cancelled, and that is to facilitate a senior versus under 20 county football challenge at the Fern Centre on the same night. So I was bowled over by this. So like, this was two fixtures called off at the last minute within April. So like, I mean, what's club players' gripes? That we don't know when we're playing. So they're being called off at the last minute, and, you know, give us something. So they're giving the April for clubs, and it's actually happened even worse within the April for clubs. So they're playing the same night as the county under 20s and seniors are either playing each other, or they're both training in this Fern Centre. But like, I mean, is there nowhere else that these matches could be played? That's the only venue, obviously, in the whole of Wexford. So I rang the Wexford County Board yesterday, and they said that the games were called off because they allow inter-county teams, the hurling and football, 3 uninterrupted weeks preparation for championship. what's going on with the April for clubs if you're allowing three? Like, that completely is wasting the April of clubs' time, because at least two of those weeks will be within April, because I think the hurlers are out on the 12th of May and the footballers could be out something similar at their play in Leash. So, like, I mean, 3 weeks preparation. Anyways, so I said, if you allow 3 weeks preparation, which is fair enough, I said, I was just playing the game along, that's fair enough, why on earth would you be fixing fixtures within that 3 weeks then? And then rescheduling. Oh, the fixtures were fixed in error, I was told. And I said, well, if they were fixed in error, why wouldn't you have fixed it sooner than at the last minute when clubs were preparing for it? Oh, we've no comment on that. So, like, I kind of knew what I was dealing with these people. Like, I mean, this goes from the bottom to the top of, from what I can see, is making things up as they go along. And, like, I mean, no strategy or no long-term planning or no vision. And I think that's the big problem with Croke Park. Where's the vision? Where is the long-term 5-year plan of where this is going year on year? This is, like, basically the way Croke Park are talking about this April for clubs, when all the criticism is off a mess. We'll see how it goes for three years. As in, like, we're going to, you know, we might change. Like, there's no real, we're confident this can work and these are the reasons why you can, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's almost like, look, we'll change it if you want to treat, you know, this kind of way. It's all a bloody panic. But, like, I mean, to talk about this being the second time in April that the club game has been postponed, I was bowled over by that.
Yeah, and, like, as much as I think county teams should be allowed to prepare for April, I mean, if the championship fixtures are already set, then just work around it. It's a bloody in-house game. Like, you know, if you've got a couple of injuries, your boys carrying knocks, and let them watch the in-house game against the under-20s.
Well, I'd say the county set up, saw these three games and fixed training for the same night and just went, look, you know what I mean? It's the inter-county management, I'd imagine, has scuppered these three games, because the three games, in defence of the Wexford County Board, the three games were fixed on Friday night to allow the inter-county management the Saturday to Sunday. But the inter-county management put the training on the same night as these. So to really force the county board's hands.
But isn't there a good chance that the county players won't be involved on the date that the games have been rescheduled for? Because it's a week before a potential Leinster quarterfinal.
This is where the plot thickens. This is where it gets even better. So the games have been refixed for the week before the Leinster quarterfinal. So, like, I mean, which is the most bizarre thing. So there are 3 weeks preparation, which was stressed to me. 3 weeks, we allow our teams. And I was almost belligerent the way I was being told. 3 weeks. No, 3 weeks now, the way we... And then to have the next game scheduled in for 1 week before the Leinster quarterfinal.
3 weeks before the qualifiers, probably. But, like,
oh my God.
In fairness, it hasn't been the most disastrous April, I'd say, in Wexford, because I saw on the website that they've played 2 championship games in senior football already, on, like, 7th of April and the 14th of April. So they did get some out of the way. But, it has been... still a bit of a balls up towards the end of it.
It's a bit of a PR disaster, really.
Is it senior, like, just as an aside, is a senior versus an under 20 not a bit of a mismatch as well, or are they going to mix it up?
It's nonsense. And someone has told me it's not a challenge game, and the county board couldn't confirm it was a challenge game, only that the both of them are there that night. Now, I'd be fairly sure probably are going to play each other. And those, trust me, those senior versus under 21, you might have played them at club, they're a waste of time. They actually are a waste of time. Like, what's the point of them? They're stupid. Like, I mean, the senior team should be beating the under 21 team. Well, it's not even, it shouldn't even be a competition unless the senior team isn't up for it, and the under 21s have a match to follow at championship pace, for example, and the senior team aren't. But it's not it shouldn't be a competitive game even to begin with. So I don't know. Moving on from this is the CPA survey results are out. So this is all building in this whole same direction, and it's the same direction for the last 3 weeks of what an absolute nightmare this April has been. So, like, they've been pretty outstanding results from these surveys. So 89% would like to see designated periods for club, county and college so that there's no overlap. So, like, I mean, for 89% to come back from a survey, now the survey results, I'm not sure, for online surveys, there's 3,959 people responded to it. About 20,000 members. I don't know if that's a bad for online, or would you know, Connor, from the website?
The first thing that stood out to me was that only for less than 4,000 members responded.
But people are lazy online.
I know, but the thing is, like, I think the CPA should have way more than 25,000 members for a start, because club players are better at nothing than whining and then not actually taking any action, whether it's going to an executive meeting. So the 25,000 that would have signed up, I would imagine, are fairly interested parties. So for only, that's less than one in five of those people responded. And like, I filled out the survey, it literally took me 30 seconds. It was very well phrased and everything. So like, that was the thing that struck me, because like, apathy is the worst thing that can happen to the CPA. And as I said, the questions were really well phrased, and like, what, 89% for like a clear kind of period for all those different fixtures. I think, although it mightn't have been taken by many people, the results were absolutely conclusive.
Yeah, it's
89% of 15% of their members, which is a very small percentage of their actual GA members.
It's still a sample size, though. Like, I mean, what's any sample? Like, I mean, you look at the JNLR figures for radio out today. Sure, that's only like 1,000 people. Yeah, that's what national radio's based their whole advertising kind of prices on.
But can you assume that, because this is a big call to arms, the whole that's what the CPA is, but if 85% weren't bothered taking a survey, that it's you can sort of assume that 85% aren't that fussed?
Yeah, it's hard to know. Like, I mean, you could have a big debate with your teammates at club level, and then you could say, well, look, we'll bring this up at the AGM, and none of them will go to the AGM. No. So, like, I mean, there's this apathy about players. Are they really interested in making that change, or do they just want to play? I think they just want to play. I think it's up to their leadership groups, like CPA management, to drive this. Like, I just don't think it's on players' agenda.
Like, they like giving out as well, though.
They love giving out. They love giving out. But like, I really don't think players have too much underplayed. Like, and that's what, like, I always see the GPA always poll their members, and I'd say their members look at this going, well, I've training tonight. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Players are not thinking on these lines. Like, we're out of the game. Well, not all out of the game, but I'm out of the intercounty scene playing club. But you can talk about, we work in media, we've time to talk about it. I don't think players have any real interest in driving this. That's what their union management's job is. Like, I think polling players, I'm not too sure what you really get out of it, and this is an example of that. But like, a blind man can see this is the overlapping. I thought that was the most obvious one.
It was, yeah.
Like, I mean, there's other ones where they're saying 56% stated their satisfaction that April had been set aside for the club activity, and then there was 72% not happy with the organisation of club fixtures in their county. So there's other ones, kind of more boring ones. I thought the most interesting one was 89% would like to see designated period for club intercounty college. And just on that point of designated periods, I was reading an interview with Paul Mannion, who was doing the rounds at a sponsorship event this year, and this kind of just jumped out at me straight away when you talk about overlapping competitions. He said, he's talking about injury, and this was the first year he kind of got a run injury free, I'm pretty sure he was saying. He says, the last 3 or 4 Februarys I picked up hamstring injuries mainly, and a quad injury in 2016. They were mainly from Sigerson weekends, or maybe that time of year, the heavy pitches. Obviously pre-season takes its toll too. So this is Paul Mannion, like a Ferrari type of player, like a natural athlete, and he's getting injured every year around the Sigerson weekend, and he's done his pre-season and it's the Sigerson weekend, and he's probably coming into county and he's pulling up. Like, I mean, is that not an advertisement for saying, here, just can we not maybe finish that and then let him go to that, and then not have all this overlapping? And then, like, I mean, you have Liam Silk coming out and saying, like, he was with Curragh Finn, they've won the last 5 championships in a row and 3 Connacht titles, so we've gone from February to March regularly, and 3 of those years he's been with the Galway panel, and there was Galway under 21s too, because he's only 23. This is in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, send that man to America on a first class flight and let him put his feet up. Do you know what I mean? It's all this overlapping. It's killing Liam Silk to the point that, here, I could do with a break here. That's 5 years. Dear McConnelly, Vincent's so good that it's going March, it's going ending in March, county, club going well, back into the county again, you're all in semi-final or final with Vincent's, and like, he's just probably at the stage where he needs to take a break from the game. It's too much. Don't overlap the competitions. Give players some downtime. And the downtime for players would be if the club finishes in the calendar year and you're not starting until the following February. So if everyone gets January, you know, some sort of downtime away from these demands.
I like the way you pointed at me there when you said, dear McConnelly. Conan, you'll know about this. You'll feel strongly about this. Yeah, that's... Like, listen, how long do we have to keep talking? I'm just surprised that 11% said that they wouldn't want designated periods.
Yeah. Who are these weirdos? They're spoiled votes. These were signing their names Bart Simpson or whatever.
Just like, on the Sigerson though, is it like this year, I think, was the first year that they didn't complete it in the same weekend. And it was a pity, because Sigerson weekend used to be really kind of attractive to kind of watch. And you know, I imagine for players to be involved in. But like, when you think about the demands that were made of players on Sigerson, that's a player played like 2 games, and like, load of them seemed to go to extra time. You're probably talking about playing like 200 minutes or like up on 180, 200 minutes in 2 days.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And having tried like with your training program on top of that. Never
but
did.
You know that changed from three. There were quarter, semi and final.
I only remember
three.
Semi and final now.
When we won up in Belfast with Tralee in 99, it was quarter final Friday, semi final Saturday and final Sunday.
Full games.
Did you play full game?
I actually got injured, would you believe, and I tore my hamstring and missed the Leinster under 21 final a month later and all out of it. But that was the way, back to the hotel, jacuzzis, all that kind of stuff, and get going again. Sure, I mean, that's torture altogether.
Like, you really want to just get beat in the semi-final and then enjoy
well, that's
weekend.
Another thing. You see fellas going around and they're having a few pints and they're having the crack on the Friday and Saturday when you're preparing. Well, I suppose, look, you prefer to be in the final.
Yeah, sound like Joe Brolin.
But Paul Mannion was an interesting one, and this was later on in his interview, and he's painting the picture of, you know, inter-county life, and it was more honesty that you get from a lot of Dublin players, but he's saying he's very tired all the time. When I think back on my inter-county career, I remember being tired a lot, an awful lot, and this was before the 7 a.m. sessions came in. I just remember being so bloody tired that you're finishing work and then you're, I used to run from John Rogerson's Quay up along the Liffey there down to Gardiner Street where I lived, and I'd have to jog because I'd get off at 5 and training would be on at 7, and so I'd get down to the car about 5:15 and then you've got about an hour and 45 minutes in that traffic, so you're just making training on time. You get late to training, there's this kind of thing and they don't know what you've been doing since 5 o'clock, right? And then you train for maybe, sometimes it could be 2 hours, you could have a meeting. Some nights it might not be food after training, and I'd drive out to my mother's house, get some food. By the time I'm getting back on the road, it's 10:30, 11:00. I'm back in Dublin at 12:00, and then the alarm's going at 7 a.m. the next morning again. Yeah. And you're just tired. Yeah. But Mannion was saying the same thing. He says, I'm up at 7 in the morning and wouldn't be getting home till 10 o'clock. So he's got 2 hours on me there. He says, those days can be quite tough. The hardest part is that you're just tired a lot of the day. You'd nearly be falling asleep at work, and then you're going training and feeling exhausted trying to get up to go training. And I always found that after commuting down from Dublin, that it could be a half hour in training where I'm just kind of going, geez, how am I going to get into that? And then you kind of get warmed up properly and you kind of get into it. But it is difficult. I was surprised for Mannion, because all the Dubs obviously live in Dublin, so they don't have that kind of commute. But definitely, inter-county players listening to this will know that you're so tired all the time, you'll have your lunch in work. And then if it's during the summer and the sun's coming in the window and it's hot, like, you could almost fall asleep at your desk between the hours of 2 and 4. Like, you could nod off. You're gone. Like, it's it's a tough life. But, like, I mean, you don't want to hear me giving out all the time about, like, is there anything I'm positive about, maybe? Am I gone very grumpy altogether?
Going to America, you're positive about that.
This is Paul Mannion saying this. This isn't me. I just can identify, a lot. And he's saying that the other fellas, this is him just out of college, and the other Dublin lads are kind of slagging him off. He's saying your body takes time to adjust to this new kind of lifestyle, because when you're a student, you obviously just go home and go back to bed whenever you want. But now he's just finding this workforce thing a bit of a shock to his system.
A lot of students do have a big commute as well. Like, I remember living with a Derry player at college, and he had, like, it was depressing just watching his life, like, you know, just taking off down the road, you know, 4 hour round trip and then coming back up when everybody's already out or whatever, like, you know. And just, like, that is happening to college players as well, where they're not escaping it just because they have an easier day.
No, exactly. Just one more thing on Mannion, because we've bloody flying, or not exactly flying through this, we've a few more bits to get through to. He lived for a year in Japan. He speaks fluent Japanese.
Jesus.
He, when they finished the championship last year and they won the All-Ireland, he went away travelling to Antwerp, Amsterdam, Budapest, Manchester, New York, Chicago, Washington, Austin, Miami, Panama and Colombia before he finished his travelling.
Since when? Sorry.
When they won the All-Ireland last year.
No wonder he's tired.
But then he met up with them, with the Dublin team in South Africa in January. So, like, I mean, you've time for Paul Mannion, who just has a bit about him and likes to get away and still bloody win All-Irelands as well. Like, I mean, so we're big fans of Paul. Well, I'm a big fan of Paul Mannion anyway, so I don't know about you.
He's the most travelled GAA player since you, Willie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was impressed with all that kind of thing. Yeah. There's one story always impresses me, and that's after the World Cup in 2001 in South Korea. And Owen Hargreaves, after the World Cup, he just took off backpacking after England were knocked out and just went backpacking for 3 or 4 months and just went, I'm just going to do a bit of travelling on my own.
That's where he picked up that weird accent.
I always remember, you never hear that, no, that Hargreaves just went off backpacking. You never hear of any of these kind of...
Was he not playing with Byron at the time? Would he?
This is during the summer, no, maybe not for 4 months. He would have been, whatever. Anyways.
Pre-season, 4th of July.
Right, BBC, this is going to make Conan cry, potentially, this story. So BBC are losing nearly all their Ulster Championship games. So Ulster football supporters have been absolutely spoiled for the last 6 or 7 years. Is it 6 or 7 years, Conan? Anyways, in the recent past, they've been spoiled with six out of seven games. I don't know, that's where I was getting the years from. I don't know for how long. Anyways, for the last while, they've been seeing an awful lot of games on BBC, six out of the seven. So it was always a thing with me, with RTE, I said, why are they showing so many Ulster Championship games? They just were. And yeah, I think the BBC took their feed. So now that RTE, understandably, and Sky, we talked about this last week, they're not going to want to show these Ulster matches now because the TV deal is the same. And that's another thing that we could give out about that we did last week. That's going to be the same. So now, understandably, RTE and Sky are going to go, we want Super 8 games now because they're going to be fantastic and they're going to be really high profile. So the Ulster Championship is losing out. There's only going to be a semi-final and a final shown on RTE. So like Monaghan Tyrone is not going, we're not going to see that game, which is a huge disappointment. And BBC obviously take their feed from RTE, so BBC aren't going to be able to show them. So like, I mean, I don't know what the mood up in with the Gaels in Ulster is, Conan, but I wouldn't think they're too happy about
this. We're
just
being kicked in the teeth every year, we're used to it by now. It's horrible. Like, I think it's bad for everybody. I think it's bad for Mayo as much as it's bad for Leash. There's a lot of good games that aren't going to get shown because of this.
Just when Ulster football was starting to become a bit more positive, now we're not going to get
exactly.
Just when they're turning the corner.
That's propaganda. Like, you don't want to show, don't want to hear the good news from Ulster. But it's really bad. And like, I know we talked about it before, but you know, unless you have a Sky, but if you're not watching these live, they're not even on live anymore. But you know, the option there, like I have to send to Connor if I want to watch games, sometimes I have to pay for GAA Go, even though you're on the same island.
Yeah,
but
that's,
you know,
crazy,
you're in the six counties and all, because you do have stuff like that going on. Like, and not everybody has TG Cahir or RTE, and they don't have a Skybox to record games and stuff. So there's just a lot of stuff like that, which is sort of hammering home the, I suppose, the partitionism like thing that we'd all be weary about up north. Like, you know, you always feel like you're getting neglected sometimes, and maybe this is another.
Yeah, you're all paranoid up there. We know. Well, RTE actually.
That's what you took from that.
The way it's all condensed is that the Ulster as well. I know RTE want Super 8, but the RTE also show a lot of hurling games, and the Ulster Championship now is clashing with Munster hurling. And if you're clashing with Munster hurling, you might as well forget about it. Like, I mean, that's the end of it with RTE. This is the glamour. This is the mystique and the beauty of the Munster Championship. And they're right, it's great. But that's why, because now, like, I'm thinking this summer it's going to be really difficult even from this podcast, because I like to go to matches. If I go to matches, I'm gone for the whole day Sunday. Like, trying to put the show together then when you get back at 10 o'clock that night after not seeing any hurling and having a hurling show the next day. So I'm starting to panic now that I might not even be able to get to go see games. Yeah. You can't analyse games properly on the television. It's just going to be, it's going to be hard.
May and June are going to be crazy.
May and June. June is going to be mostly hurling, and then July is going to be dominated by football.
Well, I'll look after the hurling show. Don't worry
about
it.
Well, we know that. Yeah, exactly. I'll just let you watch the Munster hurling while I go off and watch the football. It's just going to work out great. But that's just another thing. And this TV thing, we've predicted this on last week's show, that next year the GAA will correct this. They'll renegotiate a few extra games. And my question is, why couldn't they do it this year? It's always reactionary with them instead of actually having a bit of vision and going, look, this deal was signed before we made the changes. It wouldn't probably make sense to increase them on the pro rata basis based on, you know what I mean, the extra games. Of course, they didn't do that. So they just left it the way it was, and they took the safe option that's going to, you know, kind of drive people crazy during the summer.
Maybe it's better because all we hear in May and June anyway is how shit the championship is and this game's crap and
football doesn't come to life
especially
until
football
August,
like. And that's why I think hurling is going to dominate June while the football championship is going through the provincial boar fest.
Yeah.
And then you get into July and then the football will have hit its crescendo with the Super 8. So like, I mean, in that regard, we're going to have excitement we're going to have big games every weekend,
the summer,
and that's great. Let's be honest about that. Whereas, like, there was so much analysis about how shit the championship was because we only got one game, and it was a one-sided game. So the over-analysis then on the Sunday game about how terrible this was. Now we're going to have a fully packed Sunday game, just trying to squeeze everything in. So there's going to be no analysis about how crap the championship is.
And BBC was a big problem actually with the Ulster Championship and how long it was as well. It was going on for far too, like some teams were only playing three games, but they had to wait 9-10 weeks to play them.
Yeah. Like, you
know, because it was all on TV. But now maybe if it's not on TV, eventually they might start squashing them up.
Yeah, no, I'm totally not against the condensing of the season. I think that's definitely a good thing. Chris Barrett, quickly have to go through these because I think we're bloody gone in nearly 40 minutes here now. Like you're in good talkative mood today. So Chris Barrett was interviewed this week as well, and he was talking about getting loads of plaudits in the All-Ireland final, and rightly so. And then he kind of pointed out that Dean Rock scored 3 points off him, and then he fouled Dermot Connolly for the winning point. And you're like, it is possible to play brilliantly and not play brilliantly at the same time, because like, I mean, some of the balls he won was incredible, eye catching, and he should be very proud of his performance. But then when you look at the basics of some of the things he didn't do well, like, I mean, it's mad how you kind of look at a match and go, this lad's been phenomenal. I know often your man scoring isn't always directly your fault either.
Yeah, stats don't tell the whole story. Like, Barrett was amazing in that game. I remember he made one turnover, I think it was after Lee Keegan's goal.
After
he made it, he gave a big fist pump, and we all thought, oh, this is our year. We're going to do it. But like, if you're to really nitpick as well, he made a big gasping dive to try and get the ball from Jeremy Connolly. He missed it, and Dean Rock ended up fisting over the bar. But I remember Paul Galvin wrote a column actually after the game. He was like, I see Chris Barrett getting plaudits, but Dean Rock kicked 3 points and Barrett gave away the winning free, whereas Killian O'Connor is getting abuse. He missed a free hit the post in nearly the last minute, yet he scored 3 points in play at really crucial stages.
Yeah, it's so mad, it's
just,
isn't it?
It's just how different people perceive the game, but like, Barrett is always likely to be humble and I see he was getting plaudits.
The stats were though that it was 6 clean interceptions or dispossessions. Many times you see a Dublin player lose it, and it was 5 times in the second half. So that's, you know, stats are once every 7 minutes he took the ball straight off a Dublin player, twice off Dean Rock as well, so it probably looked like he was on top of it.
And was after a brilliant semi-final as well. He marked James O'Donoghue twice and did really well in them.
And that's the question, I suppose, to you, Connor, because you're obviously from Mayo, is how good could this lad be? Because I was reading in the same interview, he's been riddled with injuries since 2011. Like, he's never got a good run at it. He's still out injured now this year. It was the same last year. He only got back after, did he miss all the league
last year as well.
And like, you're wondering, how good is Chris Barrett? How highly is he rated in Mayo if he got a run at it?
See, really highly. And think of Chris Barrett has been around for a long time as well. He was on the under 21 team, the one in 2006, which is like 12 years ago now. But the thing about Chris Barrett was, like, we always knew, I would always regard Chris Barrett as a footballer. So the last couple of years he's been cornerback, but like, he could easily fit in at centre back. He's always had that about him, always comfortable going forward as well. Kicked 2 great points against Tyrone in the 2013 semi-final. But it's kind of a testament to him that he's kind of developed this game that you could legitimately see him as a brilliant man marker now. I mean, we're thinking of Lee Keegan's going to be out for the Galway game, and we're thinking already, we're shitting ourselves about who's going to mark Damien Comer. Chris Barrett has only played a couple of games with his club, but like, I would imagine that he's kind of as high up in the list as anybody, because it mightn't be lightning fast, but he's quick, he's strong, and I think he might be the man to manage him if he's fit enough, because as you said, he's missed the entire league. But really highly rated. It was just such a pity that like, he never got a consistent running the team, you know, because he's been riddled with injuries.
That's
last
it,
year.
Yeah. So he hurt his knee in 2012 and had 4 surgeries between there and the space of 2 years. And in 2016, he had tendonitis issue with his hamstring, and that lingered on. And you know, so it's been a combination, mainly the knee, that's been kind of bothering him. And again, it's like, you'd see some players that go through their careers injury free, and then you see other players who consistently are trying to battle that fight against it, and it's not easy. And talking on it, go on.
It was just when he was getting, you know, starting to build a bit of momentum every single time that these injuries used to hit him, you know. And the thing was, like, up until I'd say the middle of last summer, we weren't sure whether Chris Barrett was going to start in the Mayo team, and then all of a sudden he's like a shoo-in for an All-Star after that performance in the All-Ireland final.
I think it was the international rules, he got injured after the year, he's been out since the international rules. You're saying he's back playing a little bit of club. Another player back playing a little bit of club is Brian Hurley, lads, and he spoke to us on the show last year. Big fan of Brian Hurley. He's one of these really busy forwards, wears his heart in his sleeve and stands up in his count, you know what I mean, always showing, and he's got an awful lot of class about him as well. So after 13 months of rehabilitation, he's only 25, so he tore his hamstring off the bone 2 years ago, And then made a comeback from that and tore his hamstring off the bone for a second time in the space of a year. So he came on for 13 minutes for the Castlehaven Juniors against the Donovan Rosses. So, like, I mean, he was talking about how kind of nervous he was coming onto the field, and he said he gave the analogy of a car being parked in the garage for 2 years and you're turning it on wondering how it's going to drive and stuff. But, like, I mean, you wish him the best of luck. And he said, like, it is small steps from coming on as a sub in a junior match this year with Cork probably coming a little bit too soon for him, I suppose. But, like, I mean, you'd love to see him go injury free for a few years.
It's just great to see him play. I remember that interview was quite tough to listen to, actually. Talking about, you know, lying in his room and because he couldn't do much and getting agitated with people, and, you know, it's great to see him out and about and doing any sort of football again and on the road back. And he is only 25, so
you can just look to Colm O'Neill, I suppose. Sure, Colm O'Neill tore his cruciate how many times?
Three times.
As well, and it's still like he might have lost a bit of sharpness, but he's still really, really good. Like, so
he'll be getting a phone call from America anytime soon.
Maybe that's where he could go, out to America. But he got a text from Seamus Coleman as well, which do you know, like, the GA is weird like that. He'd have no direct link to Seamus Coleman, but he might know someone from Donegal who might contact Seamus Coleman. You might send him a text. I think Paul O'Connell has done it with, I think Paul O'Connell might have done it with Brian Hurley as well, actually. Was he telling us that? Because
would have been the same injury,
hamstring off the bone. I think it was Brian Hurley. But, like, I mean, it's lovely the way these fellas just send a message. And, like, the likes of Paul O'Connell and Seamus Coleman, I wouldn't say they even realise the kind of boost. Imagine that.
You'd
be like, Jesus, wasn't that nice for them to do that? And I'd say it gave Brian Hurley a kind of pep in his step for a couple of months in that recovery, even though Seamus Coleman would have been out close to a year with his as well, was he? It was only meant to be a 5 month thing and it turned out to be a lot longer.
He started training again.
But it was ages before he played it. It was long past October before he started playing with Everton. Anyway, he's only back in the team recently, so I think he had it. Did Seamus Coleman have a setback with his?
He gets a thigh injury or something. You know what happens then, you get a different injury.
But the
point is, will you send on my number to Jim McConnell?
Just give him a little bit of a pep talk, it would be lovely. If Dermot ever, anyone listening to this podcast that talks to Dermot, if he is taking a bit of time out, he could be a guest pundit on the show. His actual interview on the GA Hour was the most listened to podcast we've ever done. That'll tell you the kind of level that Dermot Connolly is.
Connolly listened to it 1,000 times.
that could be true. Right, finally, lads, because Brian Cody, he's in the title of the podcast and you've all clicked on it, so I didn't feel the need to actually have to tell you. So I was at the Leinster final launch this morning and I spoke to Brian Cody. He's the only one I talked to, so he's coming up now in part two. But the last story before we leave is me giving a shout out to Paul Leonard. So he's a manager of the men's teams in Qatar, and you think we have a lot to complain about, lads, when we're talking about a whole load of kind of issues we have here with April for clubs and all this kind of thing. Have a listen to what these lads have to go through. So Paul listens to the podcast and he asked me for a shout out. I think he deserves a shout out, to be fair. So he says, since the blockade of Qatar by other Middle East countries such as United Arab Emirates and Bahrain, our GA teams could not enter the Middle East leagues. I didn't even know there was Middle East leagues. So we got word of this in August, last August. So instead of throwing in the towel, we decided as a club to keep things going. We had many in-house tournaments, one of which the former GA president attended. All big fans of the former GA president here, I don't think. Then we get word that they could play in the championship in Abu Dhabi on the 20th of April would be possible, because Abu Dhabi is a sports city and the other tournaments are held in rugby clubs and they didn't want them playing. So we quickly changed our jerseys instead of having Qatar on them and prepared for the championship, which is the biggest tournament of the year. So the flights cost £500. The only problem was that they had to get a flight from Qatar to Oman and then Oman to Dubai and then a 2-hour bus journey to Abu Dhabi. Turned out to be a 12-hour journey, costing £500 to get to this tournament. Many people were going directly from school. So they were nervous about being, this is the next thing, they were nervous about being turned away from Dubai if they were found out that they were Qatar residents. Unfortunately, a lot of people in the group, 80 in total, had Qatar stamps on their passport. So 13 were detained for questioning and didn't get through for for ages. So they eventually got through anyways and they got the bus from Dubai to Abu Dhabi. So they arrived at a hotel at 2:30 a.m. and then got up at 7 a.m. the next morning of the tournament for breakfast. Amazingly, every team that travelled made the finals and four teams brought home trophies. So congratulations to that. So they went 6 months of training and no matches, and this is kind of what they had to do to keep stuff going, playing GAA in Qatar. And a very special mention to John Mullen, who kept everything going for the club. So that's Paul Leonard and John Mullen. Congratulations and fair play to you for keeping it going. And I think the best thing, compliment I can play for you, is to get Conan to say,
"That's what the GAA is all about."
Beautiful. Okay, Brian Cody's next.
When your legs don't work like they used to before.
I was actually coming home on Saturday morning and I had the podcast on from Newbridge Southern 8, and that helps the journey, to be honest. If I ran out of Ed Sheeran songs, depends on mood I'm in. Ed's good for if you're in a sappy mood, Ed's good to sing along to. And then if you're in a GAA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on.
Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70.
Yeah, Brian, so I suppose we're here at the Leinster Championship launch, so we'll start with that. What's your thoughts on the new format? Are you happy with it, or you're a traditionalist and it's all a load of nonsense?
Oh, look, it's different, you know. I mean, there's no point in sort of assessing something before it happens, really, you know. We'll have to wait and see how it goes. It's different, it's challenging, it's completely different, really, from the point of view of, you know, you play, originally, up to now, we'd play a game and we'd go away with... We train for next game over for a couple of weeks and that,
yeah.
But now you play a game and you don't train, you recover,
yeah.
And you hope that you're steer clear of injuries and everything else. It's like the National League.
Yeah, it is.
We just played it and it's like a league again almost. And, you know, every game is going to be so tough, so challenging, you know, so physically demanding and everything else. How it's going to pan out, I certainly don't know.
Yeah, I suppose it's almost like next year managers and management teams will be a lot more knowledgeable about how to plan the whole year, really. Everyone's kind of in the dark at the moment.
Absolutely, they are, yeah. And yeah. I mean, it's probably people are looking forward to it, anticipating it and maybe excited about it. But I just don't know how it's going to go.
Yeah.
We start off against Dublin in the first game and, you know, that's going to be a really, really huge challenge, and off we go again then, and by the time we finish, who knows where we'll be.
Did your league champions, and congratulations, did you notice a bit of shadow boxing in the league in comparison to other years, or was the league played out the same way as normal, or, you know, was there any noticeable difference considering you're going into another league again?
I would say different teams approach it differently. You know, we approached it in a way, I suppose, that we had no choice with. We were, I suppose, building a team and rebuilding a team, if you like, and looking at players and trying to find out our best 26 or 30 players that we could have. And we had a big turnover of players in doing that. And, you know, by the very nature, young players coming into a team, they were given 100% all the time. And every day we went out really, really determined to try and do as well as we possibly could. Other teams, I would say, not every team did that. So it's very, very difficult to assess. You know,
yeah.
We won the league, and it was fantastic to win the league, and we're delighted we won the league. But does it give us any advantage for the championship? Absolutely not. What it has done is it has given, you know, our younger players a taste of what inter-county hurling is about.
Yeah.
But have they experienced a taste of what inter-county championship hurling is about? No, they haven't. And
yeah.
that awaits them. Whereas, I suppose, I mean, without a shadow of a doubt, we're probably the least inexperienced team out there right now from the point of view of the number of players who haven't sampled championship hurling before. But that's exciting, and it's great to be looking forward to, like, with young players coming through.
Yeah, you've won so much. Like, I mean, the list is endless, really, with what you've won. But was that league win sweet, considering it seemed like the knives were out for you after a couple of games this year, in comparison, like, ever, I suppose?
Yeah, well, I mean, there was no expectation of us doing anything, I suppose, really. And if we hadn't have a good league run, say, even if we hadn't been relegated, but if we had just maybe survived, we certainly would be written off completely as regards any kind of prospects we might have. And now suddenly maybe people are saying maybe to have a chance, and I don't know. I mean, I said from day one, even, you know, before the league started and after the first game and after the second game when we were beaten, that I still would have a real confidence in the players. I have a confidence in their genuineness and their honesty and their spirit and in their application and in their potential, you know. And they've proven that they have all of those things. By the way, they apply themselves in every match they played in. And like I said, it's a huge step up now for them for the championship. And it's going to be massively challenging for us. But all of us are looking forward to it.
Yeah, but the reason I asked you the question was, like in other years, like you were in a relegation playoff against Clare before, but no one was saying this is the end of Kilkenny to the same extent as they were this year after the first two games. It was really like this, good luck. Like, I mean, Michael Deignan says you'll never win another All-Ireland. I don't want to single him out because there was a lot more saying the same thing.
No, that's correct. That's absolutely true. I mean, the perception was, I mean, we went out early in the championship last year, you know, and we weren't competitive last year. And people were looking at the personnel involved, and people were looking at our players, and people were looking at, I suppose people were concentrated more so on players who were no longer playing, and players who were retired, than on players who actually are available to us now. And they were saying, well, look, at he's gone, he's gone, he's gone, he's gone, so Kilkenny are gone. And we had to go out and just get on with it, like, you know. And if we ever were get to the stage where we kind of buy into that kind of thinking that, I know we're not going to be up to much this year, we shouldn't be doing the thing, like, you know. So yeah, I would always be positive and have a real positive sense about the potential for Kilkenny hurlers, and I will continue to have that.
Would you use what's said as motivation to them, or would you tell them to ignore it, or what way
to
do you?
To be honest, I ignore it completely. I don't pay any attention to it, you know, because the lads who say it can change their minds the next day, you know. It's simple as that, and it's not, they don't have to be spot on, they don't have to be right, they don't have to be wrong. They just have to give an opinion and then give a different one the next day if they want to.
Yeah, like Eamon Dunphy. Come here, you've tweaked the tactics a bit this year, is that fair to say?
You see, there's a lot of talk about that. Like, you know, it's not a question of it's like as if we used to play a particular brand of hurling and never did anything else, like, for years. And that's completely untrue, because what we had were, we had some very, very good players. And I think it sort of demeans their ability to play whatever way they had to play. I mean, we have always played, I would believe, a very, very good hurling. And the players who went out in the field, they were never sent out in the field to rigidly play a particular type of game. They were sent out in the field, we trained, we prepared, and would have a great trust and a great understanding that these are very, very good players, and they understand very, very well how to play the game. We would always look for a really good work rate and genuinely sort of, but it wasn't difficult to get that either.
It was a predominantly long game, though. You know, if you're looking at it broadly, it was kind of, you had great ball winners, so you got it into the mix. It
kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
To play to your strength.
Would you have slightly moved away from that this year? Like, and that's not my analysis. Like, Davy Fitzgerald said that, for example, and JJ Delaney said it on the podcast. In case you don't trust my opinion, I'm going to throw out two other hurling brains.
Well, Davy is going to say whatever will be to his own advantage, actually. Understandably, yeah. JJ has to say something, you know. He has to say something, and the reality is,
Eddie Brennan said it on League Sunday as well.
And again, you know, the lads are now, they're now pundits, and even geniuses maybe now they are as well, so they have to speak on it. The players are never sent out to rigidly play any particular kind of game.
Okay.
They're sent out to play, you know, the game that will get them success. And the reality now as well is, I mean, there are more teams now posing different challenges, you know, with the attackers they're approaching. And the situation really is, an awful lot of teams, not an awful lot, but certainly some teams have brought very, very different tactics into the game of hurling than had been there, say, a few years ago.
Yeah.
And so therefore, I mean, the way that they're playing demands maybe a bit of tweaking to be done by the way we play, or by the way other teams play as well.
Exactly.
It's not just us, you know.
And the players seem to have adapted to it.
If you go back to last year's All-Ireland final and you watch the way the game was played, there was just non-stop long ball, you know, puck out. Every puck out was sent the length of the field. And that's suited on that particular day. And whatever way, I mean, every team now is playing the game that's in front of them and playing the game that is required to be played. And, you know, good players go out and they adapt their game.
And they adapt their game pretty quickly, because your fellas have adapted it. Like, I mean, I think it was League Sunday showed a clip of a cornerback had it and he went short to the goalkeeper, and the joke was, Brian Cody, like, back in Eddie's day, you know, you would have gone mad of something like that. But, like, I mean, then again it's a risky business too, because if that doesn't go to hand, you know, that kind of short game can come with its risks as well.
Back a few years ago, it couldn't be done because a forward would be standing beside the cornerback.
Yeah.
Now maybe with some teams that there's you have a couple of free defenders,
free
or whatever it is. But look at, I mean, everyone wants to talk about the tactics and pontificate about them. We'll see what pans out during the year, and we'll see whatever way the thing goes.
Yeah, another big tactic about Kilkenny is, or team selection, is that you had trouble with 3 and 6. And that seems to be solved now. Whether you thought you had or not, you converted Pádraig Walsh and he's doing well, and Killian Buckley looks to be natural at number 6, that they're really important positions, and now you seem to have that settled.
Well, I can never recall myself stating that we had a problem at 3-6.
Well, okay, well, this is analysis.
I mean,
as well.
So I'm being asked to speak about what other people talk.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay.
I mean, other people think what they think. I have never. I'm certainly not on record anywhere as having a worry about number 3 or number 6. I think we have two excellent players there.
And but even also, having
and we also have other players who can play in those positions as well, like every other team has.
Yeah. Well, so maybe people are thinking it because you would have converted Pádraig Walsh back there, but you did that with JJ as well. So, you know,
there's no mystery in that.
Pádraig, what is it about wing backs you can spot?
Pádraig played a lot of hurling at cornerback when he was younger.
Really?
He played cornerback for... Okay. I remember seeing him playing cornerback with the Kenny Miners, and he played there as well a lot. Pádraig is a hugely versatile player. He can play centre forward at the club.
Yeah.
You know, he can play just about anywhere. Tommy did the same thing. Killian could play in various positions as well. Lots of players can do that. I mean, you look, there's players in other counties filling all sorts of positions as well, and as much as not made of them, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So you have a few lads back now to even strengthen you, the lads back from the Defence Forces. That's going to be a big boost, but also integrating them back in when they probably won't have hurled very much. You know, how will you kind of get them back up to...
The two lads, Paul and Colin, are back. You know, they're back and they're joining us in training, and they're in good shape, physically in very good shape, which is a tribute to the way they apply themselves when they were away. Obviously then they're going to need a bit of hurling training and that, but look, what it does is it strengthens our panel, you know. That's the reality of it. And I mean, two very experienced players coming back, and the lads know that, you know, there's fellas, they haven't filled any jersey for the league, and they'll see it as a challenge for themselves now to get back to a starting position. But what they are is they are two players who are going to strengthen our panel.
Yeah, definitely. The form of TJ Reid must be very pleasing for you. Like, I mean, he was compared to Henry Shefflin and everything after the league final, and they're different players, but the leadership both of them showed, that's a big comparison between the two of them. Like, TJ's really stepped up to that kind of level of leadership.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not interested in comparing TJ to anybody else at all, and certainly not to Henry or to anybody. He's his own player in his own right, but what he has done, he has had a very good league for us. His free taking has been terrific, which has been hugely important. His general play has been outstanding as well. But that's the level he's at, you know. The level he's at. TJ is, 30 years of age now, more or less, and he's an awful lot of experience behind him, and he understands that he has to play that role and be a leader for the team.
And has the young fellas coming into the squad almost energised him to be that leader, whereas, you know, you have to be when these young lads come in?
Yeah, I would say, without ever being spoken about, I would say, obviously the fellas look around now and they see the real... They do bring energy, and they do bring kind of that kind of just... tear into things, like, you know, because that's the very nature of young lads. And you must remember as well, they all come in as young lads as well, and they know what it was like, and they knew the benefit of having players with experience driving the thing forward, of course. So that's the way it works.
Just on TJ, it must be very satisfying for you to see TJ in this kind of form, because you've seen him coming from that young age and struggling for a while, even by his own admission, thinking potentially of giving it up because he couldn't take that step up. But just his progression over the course of the last 10 years to be the player that he is now must give you a lot of satisfaction.
I'd say TJ couldn't give up hurling, to be honest.
Maybe he felt like it, but it was
anyone ever thinks like that, even himself, it's crazy, because I'd say TJ would want to be hurling in 10 years' time.
Really?
He's one of those fellas who just absolutely loves hurling. Hurling is just means so much to TJ, and that's why he's so skillful, really, because he'd puck around forever, like, you know. Training doesn't stop for TJ, you know. And it's not even training, it's just hurling, pucking around, all that kind of stuff. He loves it. And like I said, that's what has turned him into the player he is.
Is there something that clicked with him in a game that you saw that kind of stepped him up from being that kind of on and off to actually stepping up? It was a confidence kind of the lacking thing, because the ability would always have been there.
The ability was always there. No, I don't think it's any. I mean, he's had some terrific games over the years. It's not just this year.
Yeah, no, I know.
TJ has been a terrific player, and I've seen him obviously with the club doing, you know, playing phenomenal games. He's probably... consistent, very, very consistent now. But again, it's just a few league matches like this year. It's like as if TJ didn't hurl last year or the year before. He's a wonderful hurler, and he had a couple of injuries picked up as well, but hopefully now he'll get a free run and be able to carry on and just be the player he's capable of being.
Yeah, final question now is, JJ surprised me on the podcast a couple of weeks ago when he told me that this April for months is actually worse off for Kilkenny than what it was before, because you used to play a few championship games over the course of the summer, and now you're worse off with the April for clubs than you were before, which I found very kind of surprising.
There's no doubt about that. That's absolutely certain, you know, and I know that myself for certain. I mean, the club situation in Kilkenny for the past, until this year, was excellent. The clubs knew, they had their fixtures for the whole year, in February. They knew exactly when they were playing. They were playing a very important league championship match, which had a real bearing on how the championship
five of them, isn't it?
April, May, June, July, every month. They'd won every month, and they could know exactly. They could plan. They could plan taking a break. They could plan training. They could plan their matches. And they knew right up to the county final day when the matches were going to be played.
Yeah.
That's gone out the window.
Yeah, but you're unique in that you released them, where in other counties they wouldn't release them, messed it all up.
I mean, the changes have been made, and I don't know, and there's a huge amount of talk about this was done to help the clubs. It hasn't helped the clubs.
Not in Kilkenny, no.
Because they've played now, and they don't know when they're playing again. And I suppose it's difficult. The one thing I find difficult to understand, really, is all these changes are brought around to help the clubs, is what was said. And the solution that came up with was to play more inter-county matches. So that kind of seems strange to me.
Yeah, okay, Brian, thanks
Cheers.
Very much.
Grant.
So there you go, lads. You can't put it any more simply than the greatest hurling manager of all time when he says they're supposed to help the clubs, and what did they come up with? Play more inter-county matches.
Like, they don't listen to Brian Cody, they listen to nobody.
Yeah, exactly. So it's nice to know that we're not just talking nonsense here, that the greatest hurling manager of all time, and look, anyone that has any hurling and football cop on about structures knows that this is a little bit messy, and we're 4 days away from never talking about this
until next year.
Until this time next year. Right, we're going to be back on Monday with another show. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.